When it comes to meditation, there's probably thousands of different methods. And this is because each student adapts what he learns from his teacher to suit his own temperament. And then on becoming a teacher, he teaches students who then adapt what they learn from him. And so you have this continuing evolution of meditation, depending on what people need from it. But basically, the whole spectrum of methods of meditation can be divided into two basic streams, and they are samatha meditation methods and vipassana meditation methods. So I'm going to talk about those two different streams now in response to a question which goes like this. I've been looking for information about Vipassana meditation and I keep noticing another method called Samatha meditation. So I'm wondering what the difference is. As far as I know, they both do the same thing. Now, these two words, Vipassana is spelt V-I-P-A-S-S-A-N-A and Samatha is spelt S-A-M-A-T-H-A. Now, as far as this notion that they both do the same thing, you're probably half right. Both Samatha and Vipassana do indeed go to the same place, but they go by different paths and have different emphases. In short, Samatha meditation creates stillness in the mind by concentrating the attention so intensely on an object that anything not concentrated on simply disappears. That is, anything on the periphery of this object disappears. Vipassana, on the other hand, creates stillness by training our mind to live from the ultimate reality of things as they actually are, rather than the relative reality of things as we think they are. Now, if that doesn't make sense, bear with me, because it will in just a little while. So both of these methods are most effective when they're practiced together in combination with one another. And the way this happens is we train our concentration in the initial stages of meditation with Samatha methods, or with a Samatha method. And then once our concentration is sharp enough and calm enough and intent enough, we then switch to a Vipassana method and use that sharpened concentration to penetrate the false reality we create with our thinking, to see things, to see what's behind that false reality, to see what things actually are before we turn them into a whole mass of thinking in our head. And this combination of Samatha leading to Vipassana is exactly what we're doing in the audio course that's attached to this blog. Now, the popular view of meditation as it comes through the media is based on the little that people understand of Samatha methods. That is to say, the methods that are exclusively about concentrating the mind on one object. This is where the view of meditation as a kind of a natural high comes from, that came out of the hippie era. The notion that meditation is supposed to intoxicate you in some way. And you get the bliss and pictures of people with stone smiles and stuff. And it's a mistaken view. And it's very destructive because many people come to meditation looking for those things. And they're the wrong things to look for in meditation. But nevertheless, the misconceptions persist. So in Samatha, what we're doing is we work to train the attention to become very still and constant. And it's focused very intently on a very small object. Usually we use a part of the breath as an object, what's called a main object to focus on. Now in time, as we practice this in meditation, the concentration becomes very intense. It's as if we're kind of narrowing the beam of a torch in a large cluttered room. The more narrow the beam becomes, the brighter it becomes, and everything else fades into the darkness. And so it is with samatha meditation. As our attention, or our concentrated attention, becomes more and more narrow and more intensely concentrated, whatever it's not concentrated on disappears. So it's focused on the main object of the breath, let's say. Everything around the breath, the aches, the pains, all the thoughts, even our sense of self, all eventually disappears because the attention has become absorbed into the object it's focused on, such that that's all there is, the object, in what appears to the meditating consciousness as a silent field of tranquility. And of course, that's the bliss that many meditators talk so much about and become addicted to, because it's very intoxicating to be that concentrated and that still and that oblivious to all the stuff that usually disturbs us, like thinking and body sensations. But the trouble with samatha is that as soon as the meditation stops, that absorbed state rapidly dissipates, and like a dream, it leaves the mind largely unchanged. Samatha, even though it does give these wonderful experiences, does not strengthen the mind, nor does it change it, nor does it train it to be any different to what it already was before it began meditating. Nor does samatha create stillness or poise in the very place we want these things to be, not in the meditation, but in our lives. So from my point of view, samatha practiced on its own is inherently useless as a life tool, and the tranquility and calm it brings are sort of like carnivals passing through town. They come and everything feels wonderful, and then they go and everything just reverts to being exactly the same as it was before they came. So this is why samatha should always be used in combination with vipassana. And vipassana is otherwise known as insight meditation. So the way it works is, first we use samatha to sharpen our concentration and quieten the attention, so that then we can begin training the mind. And when the concentration is just enough to notice things clearly, and it's still and it's clear, we make the switch to a vipassana method. So we use the samatha for concentration, and then we switch to the vipassana method and begin training the mind to be still and calm, not just in meditation, but in the life process as well. And that's what the vipassana methods are focused on, not meditation for meditation, but meditation for life. Practiced in this way, together, samatha and vipassana complement each other extremely well, and they sort of feed one another. So we've looked at samatha. Let's look now at what we're doing in vipassana meditation. First of all, let's look at the word vipassana. It's a Pali word, which was the language of the Buddha. And the second part of the word, pasana, means to see or to perceive. And the first part of the word, vi, means through. So essentially, when we put these two parts together as vipassana, we see it means to see through. And that's exactly what we're doing with a vipassana method. But it begs the question, see through what? Well, when we practice vipassana in meditation, we're using the concentration we've built with samatha to strip away all of the concepts and thought forms that we usually apply to everything in our life. And in this way, we're training the mind to see everything simply as it is before we started thinking about it. So events that happen, we train the mind to see them as they happen, not as they caused us to think about them after they happened. And we train the mind to see sensations in the body as just sensations rather than what we think about the sensations, and definitely not how we react to them. And why would we do such a thing? Well, think about it. If you reduce all our life problems down to their source, we see that the things that make life so difficult come largely from what we think about them, rather than what they are themselves. Take worrying, for example. Such a stupid thing to do, yet most of us cannot help it, being in a cold sweat over something that might happen in the future, simply because our mind won't stop projecting every possibility and then fretting over it. It's ridiculous. And yet, when it's happening, we get lost in worry. And yet, we claim ownership of our mind. We call it my mind. But then we see that when it comes to worry, it's obviously not our mind, because if it was, well, we wouldn't be worrying, would we? Because all of us know, we know that worrying won't change anything. What'll happen will happen, yet still we worry. So let's assume that we've trained our mind in Vipassana methods and we've been practicing really diligently for quite a long time and we're pretty good at it. So let's look at what would happen when this process of worrying occurs. First of all, because we've been training the mind with Vipassana meditation, the worry doesn't appear as worry per se. Rather, it appears as what it actually is, which is two things: a mental event in combination with a physical event. That is, more accurately, a skitter of thoughts running in loops in our head, together with strong sensations in our body, created by the fear that these thoughts are creating. Now, we're not thinking about this, we just know it when the worry state arises. And we know it because our Vipassana training has taught our mind to immediately break things down to what they actually are instead of what they seem. So then, let's say the worry has taken hold and we're caught in its grip. So we observe these two parts. And let's say we observe the mentality of the worry first. What do we see? We see that the thoughts create themselves, that they're stimulated by the excitement in the body and forming their own patterns in the mind, and their own rationales, and their own loops of logic. As such, they're not going to change unless the excitement in the body changes, unless they stop being stimulated by the fear state that we're caught in. Because even though it was the thoughts that created the physicality of worry in the body, once the adrenaline starts running, that cycle spins. And the physical excitement is then stimulating the thinking. You with me so far? So the thinking creates the fear, but then the fear extends the thinking. So then we have to go to the source. We let go of the thinking. We let it rattle around in the head on its own. And using the attention that we've trained, we focus it on the sensations in the body, not the thoughts, the feelings, because thoughts can't change. The nature of thinking is that thoughts of one kind or other attract other thoughts of the same kind. That's what thoughts do. Actually, a man by the name of Deepak Chopra once characterized this as, he said, arguing with thinking is like trying to pull yourself out of quicksand by the hair. It's that pointless and that fruitless. But sensations are simple, and left to themselves, they will change. Not because we want them to, but just because they do. Because left to themselves, all things change. That's nature. So if we want to defuse this worry reaction that's happening in our mind and body, we have to focus specifically on the sensations of the worry. And what do we find in these sensations? Well, if our attention stays steadily trained on the sensations in the body, the thoughts for the lack of attention, lose coherence. They sort of fall apart. And as the thoughts fall apart, the story of the worry disappears. And without the story, the sensations in the body slowly change. They calm down and eventually disappear. And so without the fear sensations in the body and without the stimulation of the adrenaline kicking these thoughts into play, essentially the worry itself as a formation of thoughts and sensations disappears. And that's because we've used a Vipassana method to train the mind to see the worry as what it is, not what we think it is. So a mind trained in Vipassana becomes more calm simply because it's constantly seeing that everything, before it becomes a stressful thought or reaction, is simply a characterless sensation in the body. It's just the friction of life passing. And the problems that we had with it came from what we made out of it with our thinking. So in Vipassana, our mind has been trained to see that things without the story we give to them quickly fall apart. That fear without a story of what we're afraid of is just empty sensations in the body. That pain without the story of why it's there, who did it to us, how we hate it and we wish it had stopped, without that story, the pain is just sensations in the body and it quickly fades away. So in Vipassana, we're constantly making this switch of emphasis from thinking to feeling again and again and again and again and again as we meditate. Each time our attention goes to something, our awareness is there, switching the emphasis of the attention to feeling what's happening instead of thinking about it. Always feeling instead of thinking. And gradually, the attention realizes it doesn't have to turn everything into thinking, at which point it begins to calm down. And that, of course, causes the body to calm down because there's less mental activity pushing it to react. And without all this stuff that's constantly churning in the mind opens up. We begin to feel more sensations than we felt before. We don't think about things so reactively, so problematically. In fact, our thinking becomes clearer because it's less cluttered by reactions. Also, with less hormonal activity being triggered by all the thinking we're now not doing, the body becomes more healthy, more balanced, more resilient. And because we feel more alive, our outlook on life changes. We become more adventurous, more fascinated with things, more inspired. And I think that's about all I can say about it. If you want to know more, perhaps go to the website and download one of the free books that I have there. Or, alternatively, you can buy the audio course. And it will teach you both of these methods and how to use them properly. Thanks for listening.